Text or WhatsApp your view to Greg on 086 60 25,000.
Or call them in for that matter, 07491 25,000. Welcome back to the 9 till noon show. It is good to have you on board for this Wednesday. Clocks go back, I was thinking, clocks go back on Sunday. I mean, are you all for that? Does it make any difference? Or maybe it does, I don't know. They often say it benefits certain communities. I think I've heard the argument for farming communities and what have you. Listen, whatever chance of averting it, I think, are gone now that Britain's out of the EU, because we couldn't have two time zones on the island of Ireland, for an example, and they're probably less likely to align themselves to Europe at this point than they might have in the past. But, you know, we'll get an extra hour of light in the morning for what it's worth. That dissipates very quickly, doesn't it, really? Two odd minutes a day. So in 30 days, you've lost that hour. But it'll instantly be dark, like at 5:15. So we'll have our curtains drawn, our lights on at 5:15, probably 5:30 next Monday, Tuesday. Do you like the change in time? Do you think it's something that should be looked at? Interestingly, and it was pointed out to me yesterday, that the EU did progress a bill to quite an advanced stage to get rid of changing the clocks forward and back. But I just wonder... We live with it, and it's not a big issue. There's some serious stuff going on in the world, but there's light and shade, right? I'm just curious as to who it advantages. So if you are, now not just the extra hour we might get in bed if you don't have a toddler, because for some reason toddlers are like the clock on your wrist, the watch on your wrist. They seem, in my experience, to automatically reset to the new time. So you don't get the extra hour. They just wake up an hour earlier, then want to go to bed an hour later. But anyway, that's toddlers for you. But do you see a benefit to it? Is it something that you're in favour of? Because I think a lot of people would be against it, but I'm just curious to wonder who it benefits. If it's you, let us know. 086 60 25,000. Some of your comments coming through. Following Sinn Féin's dramatic drop in the polls, I believe the only solution is to dramatically drop Mary Lou McDonald as leader before the election is called. It's not too late. The alternative is a disaster at the polls that may take the party years to recover from. Or it could be a bounce back. You know, the final 3 or 4 weeks, there's a lot to play for here. Every party goes through a stage where they're in a sticky wicket. Fianna Fáil are just even slightly ahead of Sinn Féin. So, you know, Sinn Féin are not in a terrible position either. What will be interesting to see, obviously, in the last election, they were so popular, they didn't run off candidates. And I wonder now, maybe could they be running too many candidates, splitting votes and what have you? I don't know. Are the adjusting strategies in that level? But there's a long way to go, and the party will be confident of the party, I presume, will be confident going into the elections. It's probably too late to drop Mary Lou McDonald as leader. I'd say the party feels they owe her not to do that. Fine Gael were clever in that they changed their leadership at the right time, arguably. And also, too, and it was mentioned by John McAteer on the show yesterday morning, is there a natural successor to Mary Lou McDonald? Do you see a natural successor that actually will... because the person just doesn't have to be a different face. They have to be able to sort of maybe a little reset and bring the party forward. But anyway, I can't imagine any of that happening prior to the next general election. And it's only, 5 weeks away, is it? Yeah, 5 weeks away. A caller says, when you qualify in this country as a teacher, you need to do a further 2 years teaching to get your CID done before you get a full-time contract after paying $12,000 for a 2-year master's in education. I presume that's an argument sort of against it, compelling people as part of their course where there's a government contribution to stay in this country and to work for at least a short period of time. Yesterday, we spoke to a family who were over on holidays in Portugal. They had a horrible experience. I wouldn't wish it on anyone. I've never suffered bad turbulence on a plane, nor have I ever went through an attempted landing, do you know, a landing that was an abandoned. But our family that we were chatting to, they had been to Portugal. They were flying back on Sunday, and we know Storm Ashley was up and going at that point. The plane tried to land 4 times in Dublin. So you can imagine what that was like. At last minute, took off and went round again. There was also a medical scare on the plane, and it was diverted to Manchester. It ended up in Birmingham anyway. And they'd had enough at that stage, and they said, look, we have to get off this plane. And the gentleman we were talking to, Darren, yesterday, he conceded that, look, they made the decision and this was about raising awareness, not necessarily trying to get Ryanair to take responsibility or what have you. But we did contact Ryanair, Darren's flight, just to see what they might say. And their reply reads as follows. This flight from Faro to Dublin diverted to Manchester due to high winds at Dublin caused by Storm Ashley. The plane attempted to reroute to Dublin, where it was unable to land and diverted to Birmingham for passenger safety. As this was an EU to EU flight, UK Border Force would not allow passengers to disembark in Birmingham. Passengers were provided with snacks and refreshments for sale from the in-flight bar service. That's nice of them. We apologise sincerely to all passengers for these delays and diversions which were caused by Storm Ashley and our obligation to prioritise passenger and aircraft safety. We're grateful to our operations team and our crews who worked long hours in difficult circumstances during a storm on Sunday to get these passengers back to Dublin rather than cancelling their flight or having them stranded in UK airports. The flight continued to Dublin when the weather improved. These passengers, and there were about 30 or 40 of them, in inverted commas, refused to fly and voluntarily offloaded themselves following a flight diversion. So, I mean, I wasn't expecting any other response, but interesting to get that response directly there from Ryanair. Welcome back. Tracy Murray joins me on the programme now. Good morning, Tracy.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
I'm okay, Tracy. Thank you so much for joining us. And it's... hopefully a simple request. You're looking for images of your mother, who's from Donegal. Tell us a bit about your mum, Tracy, if you don't mind.
Well, it's actually my grandmother, my mother's mother, so it's probably okay. A little bit more complicated. It sounds simple, but I don't think it's going to be. Mm-hmm. So we're hoping that one of your listeners could help us find a photograph of Rose Logue, who was from Clohan. She is my mum's mum. And my mom was born in Convoy. She was born as Teresa McPeak in 1943. And Rose Logue and Patrick Logue were her parents. So unfortunately, Rose herself died when mom was only 10 months old. Rose was only 36 herself. And mom doesn't know what she looked like, has no idea. Nobody's ever described her to her. So she's always, always wanted to see a photograph of her mother.
Mm-hmm. So now, I have images here that you sent to us. They're then of your mother, Teresa Murray.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, and yes. What would be the benefit of me sharing those in that it might tweak something and they might recognise Teresa and then they might know
exactly.
Rose?
Exactly.
Okay, so for those that's watching the programme, I'm showing a picture here of Teresa Murray. That's her married name. And we're looking for pictures of her mum, Tracy's granny, yeah. Grandmother, Rose Logue. Okay, so tell us more a little bit about Rose then and what we know of her.
Okay, so Rose was born in Clohan and she had six siblings, we know, from the 1911 census. So she was 2 years old at that time and her parents were Neil and Mary. And she had Barney, Mary, William, Neil, Patrick and James. And they were in Altnapaste. Now, I'm sorry, I'm probably butchering names here, but I don't know the little townlands. So that's, I think, in Clohan. So she got married then in 1940 and they moved to Convoy. Mm-hmm. So she died then in 1944.
Very soon after Teresa was born, your mum.
Very soon. Mum was only 10 months old, yeah. So at that stage, she had an older brother, Mum, Louis, who was 2 years older than her, and they were sent to live in Dublin with her father's aunt. So they were living in Dublin using her aunt's married name of Kennedy when they were children. And it was only when she was a teenager that she realised that her real surname was McPeak. But then any questions she asked about her family were just brushed off.
And I think people will be familiar with those conversations in their homes of a certain age. Your mom now is 81.
She's 81, yeah. She turned 81 a couple of weeks ago.
And she's never seen her mother.
No, she's never seen her. So we're hoping that somebody might recognise the name Rose Logue and realise that maybe they have an old Logue family album in their house.
Yeah.
And maybe there could be a photo of Rose and someone's wedding photos or, you know, the Logue family seem to have been in Clohan for quite some time looking at the old census. Yeah. The Logues were Neil Logues. A lot of the fathers were called Neil Logue and they go back, you know, quite some time there in that area. Yeah. So I'm wondering if there's any relation out there that would know.
Yeah, and just tell me the year again that Rose died.
So she died in 1944. She was born in 1908.
So the picture obviously would have to predate 1944. But there could have been a family event.
It's a bit of a long shot. Yeah, exactly.
You never know. How important is it, your mum? Isn't it amazing that, you know, we go through our lives, everything that you go through in your adulthood, and you have your own children, and you reach the grand age of 81, which thankfully in this day and age is still relatively young, if you know what I mean. But it still remains, there's something there maternal, there's a draw, isn't there? There's still something very important to your mum, to see her own mum. I just think it's a human, almost a human condition. I don't think it's a bad thing. Well, it's amazing, isn't it?
The other thing, her father died when she was 10, and he wasn't really in her life, you know, because he was in Donegal and she was in Dublin.
Yeah.
So he wasn't really a presence in her life. So, you know, while she remembers what he looked like, she never heard anything about her mother. Now, a few years ago, actually, we did a DNA test for mom on the Ancestry website because we thought we might find something out there. And through that, we connected with distant cousins in Philadelphia. There was a lovely lady there who told us that her elderly mother, who she's since passed away, was a young girl at Rose's wedding. So her own mother, and her name was Teresa Moy Call, I believe, she had done the wedding breakfast for them. So she remembered, and she was able to tell Mom, this, the only thing she's ever heard about her is that Rose came from her brother James's house to get married and that she wore a blue suit. Hmm. And that this lady was said she was very young at the time, but she was so excited to be at this wedding. So she remembered it. Mm. And that's the only information we've ever heard about Rose.
Okay, right. So I'm showing now for those watching or watching back a picture of Teresa Murray. She was born in Convoy in 1943. To Patrick McPeak and Rose Logue. Very shortly after Teresa was born, Rose Logue passed away. Teresa, who's Tracy's mum, was just 10 months old at that point. Rose was 2 years old, according to the 1911 census, living with her parents, Neil and Mary, and six siblings, Barney, Mary, William, Neil, Patrick and James. This in house number 7, Strongarrow, Altna Pace. Now, it's very important to Mum, Teresa Murray, to see her mum. She's never, ever seen her mother, Rose. So on the off chance, there's someone out there and there's a ton of Logues around the place. On the off chance that someone has an image, you would actually be able to allow a lady, 81 years of age, to see her mum for the very, very first time. So it's Rose Logue. A caller says there's a Barney Logue on the Glenties Road in Ballybuffet at the Iron Bridge. Barney's family are from Altna Pace originally. Someone in the Finn Valley Voice would be able to pass on his details. So there is, we have a Barney Logue. Whose family's originally from Altna Pace. Now, that doesn't get us any closer to a photo, Tracy, but what it does do, it widens sort of the net. It means people are listening and it increases our chances of identifying a photo. Because I presume, you know, things were quite advanced, you know, between the 1901 to 1944. But I would imagine photographs might have been seen as something of a luxury. I could be naive in relation to that. So
we don't
know for sure if Rose, you know, ever stood in front of a photo that remains.
That's it. We don't. But we're hoping there's some family photo out there from a wedding that maybe she was, you know, a bridesmaid or one of the siblings in somebody's wedding photographs. That would just be amazing.
Yeah. Okay. And this gentleman that referenced here could very much be, could not very much be, I don't want to draw conclusions, but the name and address matches that it could actually be. No, that wouldn't make sense because that means that would make him a sister of Teresa, who I'm sure he would know her own brothers.
But anyway, I think we'd know about that.
Exactly. Right. Okay. So that's that. But anyway, listen, it is a lead. Right, Tracy, leave it with us,
that's
okay?
And
we'll see if anyone else can come up with anything. I'll recap the details once again just as I say goodbye to you to give us the best chance of it. And I think we could potentially make a lady very, very happy to see their mum for the first time. If it's out there,
that would be wonderful,
hopefully we can find
it. All
right, Tracy, take care of yourself. Pass on our love to your mother. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Okay.
Can I just say a big thank you to one of our family friends, Frankie Lupton, who actually approached you initially to do this. And if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't be talking. So
this is why we're here. Take care of yourself.
And thanks to you all there.
All right,
thanks,
Tracy. Million. Bye-bye. So that was Tracy Murray. Her mother is looking for a photo of her mother, Tracy's grandmother, because she's never seen her before. She's Teresa Murray. That's her married name. She was born in Convoy in 1943 to Patrick McPeak and Rose Logue. And it's Rose Logue who we're trying to track a picture down of. Rose passed away very soon after giving birth to Teresa. She lived in, Rose lived in, the 1911 census shows that Rose was 2 years old, living with her parents, Neil and Mary, and six siblings, namely Barney, Mary, William, Neil, Patrick and James. So those six are her brothers and sisters. She knows about those. And they were in, at that time, house number 7, Strone Garrow, Altna Paste. Now, Teresa is 81. She turned 81 a couple of weeks ago, and she's never seen her mum, Rose Logue, and the outside chances is that someone out there, maybe in the wider Logue network or McPeak or whatever it might be, may have a picture of a family event or a wedding which Rose might have been present at. And wouldn't it be lovely, albeit a long shot, and we accept that, wouldn't it be lovely if we could allow Teresa to see her mother through picture for the very first time? Anything, any information on that, recognising that it's a long shot, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Right, okay. We were talking earlier on about bowel test screening, and there was a listener who was a bit frustrated with the system. Her partner had done two tests, and on both occasions was notified that the tests couldn't be tested because they're outside of the 10-day window. And I think the caller was sort of saying, is it even worth going through with it? Because I contacted the HSC and so on and so forth. And Conceptus joined us to actually make a very important point, how important it is to test. Because I don't want to discourage a single individual from taking on this important test. Conceptus, good morning to you. Thank you for joining me.
Good morning, Greg.
Right. So you received your bowel screening test kit last year, and you're going to talk us through how important it is to actually go through with that test, Conceptor.
I will, yeah. I got this bowel screen around the end of September of last year, and it came back within a few days to show that there was a slight trace of blood in the test and to have a colonoscopy. But it was, being that it's the screening program, you could be referred to any hospital. But the following morning, I got a call from Letterkenny, and I was scheduled for the 6th of November, which I went over and had the test done, and it showed that I had a tumour on my bowel.
Oh, wow.
And I was then scanned the following week. Had a CT scan on the 13th. And I met with the consultant on the 20th, and they said that it was cancerous, or they were fairly sure it was, and that I would be referred to Galway because it's through the screening program, which I was down in December, and the consultant said it was fairly straightforward. Had surgery on the 23rd of February, and my result was that thankfully they took all away, but they took 23 lymph nodes, and one of them was positive, which meant that I had to have chemo for precautionary.
Yeah.
And I commenced on the chemo in Letterkenny on the 17th of November, and it's every 2 weeks, and I have number 9 done now, thankfully. But it's very, very important to have the test done.
My word. I'll ask you, what symptoms did you have?
Yeah. Absolutely none. Neither ache nor pain, nor any trace of blood or anything. Mm. I had absolutely no symptoms whatsoever. Wow. No.
But whatever test that they did, they were able to identify problems.
Absolutely. And it was actually, the test I sent away was so tiny that I thought they were going to send it back to tell me to send more.
Yeah.
But no, it was this. Yeah. So it is very, very important to do any tests that, whether free of charge, and everything, you know, it is free, so it's just so important. People are very lucky that it comes back, but at least, even if it says there's a slight trace, it just could be polyps, but I had the tumour, and the consultant told me that it was very tightly wrapped around my bowel, and they had to take half of the bowel away. But thankfully, I didn't have no bag or anything on. But it's just very, very important to have.
And it's one of the all cancers we need to get to early, but it's one of those cancers that can spread. What's your attitude like, Concepta? I mean, are you like, thank God or whatever? Because if you hadn't received or sent this test away, God knows how far this cancer would have spread and what impact it might have had on you. How do you deal with that?
Yes. Yeah, well, it was a big shock. It really was. But I am so glad that, I think they've brought down the age group now. I had turned 60 in the July, and that's when the test came out. But I think it's down to 59 or 58 now.
Right.
And it is a big shock, and it's not a nice journey to go on, but they are so positive that this one that I have is for precaution. Mm. So please God, it is. But the staff in oncology in Letterkenny are just absolutely wonderful. And you have 24-hour access if you need anything. And I'm so far so good. I'm not too bad. I had my chemo on Monday. I'm grand now today, but by Thursday and Friday, you can just feel a wee bit off. But I've never had any really bad reaction to it, thankfully.
And you've just got number 9 out the way. How many left now, Concepta?
Yeah, three more. Three more left,
brilliant.
It's a 12, and it's every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So it's grand, you know. Yeah.
Precautionary. Yeah. Listen, thank you so much, because I never twigged.
Important to have it done.
And I'll tell you what's really important, Concepta, because I never twigged, and it's only after the fact that if people shrugged their shoulders and said, sort of, what's the point then? So it's really important. Your story's amazing in helping me correct the record on that. It's so important to trust these tests and get them sent
away.
Very
important.
Okay.
Yes.
Brilliant. I'm delighted
because
that you're doing so well.
It may not show, but I have no symptoms. So that was the scary part. That's when it hit home, and when I sat down and thought about it. If I hadn't turned 60 last year, when would I, how far advanced would it be when I would start to show symptoms?
Oh, yeah. Who's to say? Yeah, that's the worry. And how far might it have spread throughout other parts of the body, even not contained to the bowel?
Absolutely,
Just to let people know, you can get bowel cancer screening if you're aged 59 to 69. So you're right, it's been brought down a year, Concepta.
I think it's down to
59.
I think they've scrolled down and I think so. Because I know of a few people,
Okay.
But if you don't get the letter, ring up that number and they will send you out a kit.
All right, okay. Yeah, 2,600 people are diagnosed with bowel cancer in Ireland every year. Okay, I'll recap the information here and I'll let you go, Concepta. Good luck with the rest of the treatment, and I'm delighted to hear that it seems
so
manageable.
Thank you very much, Greg.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. That's Concepta there. Don't decline those tests then. That's the message. So, you can get a bowel screening if you're aged 59 to 69. It's free. You have to live in Ireland, of course. HSE offer your first home screening test between your 59th and 61st birthday, and then they'll be offered a home test every 2 years. You have to be on the register. You need to be on the bowel screening register before you're offered a home screening test. So if you're over 59 and you haven't received an invite, can I give you a telephone number, if you don't mind? Do you want to quickly grab a pen? Or maybe this can be for mum or dad or granny or granddad. You never know. Look at Concepta there. She had a tumour on her bowel and cancer was found in one of her lymph nodes. She had no symptoms, no bleeding, no nothing. And it was picked up by this bowel screening test that's sent out to people 59 and over. Right, so if you have that number now, it's 1-800. Sorry, if you have that pen. It's 1-800-45-45-55. And that means you can register for bowel screening, and it means you will automatically, once you hit 59 and between the ages of 59 and 61, you'll get your first bowel screening test. So please do it. Look what it's done to Concepta. I don't want to over-exaggerate it, but I think it saved Concepta there. Right, 1800 45 45 55 if you're not on the bowel screening register, bowel cancer screening register. If you didn't get that number, you might know ours. Give us a ring. More than happy to pass it on. And wow, what a story. I know if I were at 59, I would certainly, as we speak during the ad break almost, I'd be getting on that register to make sure. Right. I'm holding the official opening of an all-inclusive play park in Buncrana on Friday, the 25th of October. It's at 3 p.m. The Fun for All play park features a further 13 pieces of inclusive play equipment, including a Connect 4, sensory rocker, spring surfboard, and even a mini ticket office, along with picnic benches and communication boards. It'll have the usual official bits, but I really want to open the invitation to everyone, especially those who have helped in any way. I'd like to also thank you for all your kindness and support. That comes in from Corrine Robinson. So Corrine is telling us about the official opening of an inclusive play park. It's on Friday, it's at 3 p.m, so after school, and it's in Buncrana. And go along, celebrate its opening, but also have a look at the fantastic new equipment that's there as well for everyone in the community. I'd mentioned about an hour ago about a non-serious road traffic incident. It was a lorry that went off the road. It's on the Glenties to Frosses Road. I'm showing an image of it there for those of you who are watching, and it's right off the road, it has to be said, and it is approaching what appears to be sort of the brow of a hill and a turn, so it's in a dangerous spot. No one's injured, okay, which is good news, but the Glenties to Frosses Road is going to stay closed now for the next 2 to 3 hours, this following that non-serious road traffic incident, so please use an alternative route where possible. So I imagine that's not going to open until around about lunchtime, because they're going to have to get a crane down to get this lorry out, which I don't think is going to be badly damaged. It's just fell off the verge there, it seems, which is easy done. Right, OK, so that's that. Now, regular listeners to the show will know that when on the programme I first learned of these road traffic improvements in Donegal Town, it feels like ages ago now, I don't know how long ago it was, I didn't understand why it was happening. It made no sense to me. I didn't know what problem it was going to fix. It was going to cost an absolute fortune, and it was going to cause chaos. And unfortunately, on the rare occasion, I am actually have been found to be correct on this one. Now, there's a public meeting coming up. It's the Donegal Town Traffic and Parking Improvement Committee. They're inviting people from the Donegal Town and local area to this meeting. The mayor of Donegal Town is Pádraig Kennedy. He's on to help us promote this. Good morning, Pádraig.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to all your listeners.
Right, OK. So what's been going on over the last few months that's led us to this public meeting?
Well, Greg, as you say, you were right. And I think, I suppose, like the rest of us, our concerns have been come to fruition in that the congestion led by certain aspects of the one-way system in Donegal Town has caused new traffic congestion in other areas of the town, and a system I suppose that was planned to alleviate traffic and assist in the flow of traffic has only contributed to the demise of it, really, the movement of a free flow of traffic, you know.
Well, I think what will happen is Pádraig, people will find themselves now diverting around Donegal Town. If you're coming in from Killybegs, traffic jams out towards Killybegs that were never there before. Simply, I'd never seen them there before, and it has had other impacts as well, Pádraig.
I suppose too, yeah, Greg, that end of the town, and you're leading three arteries into one artery now of one of the most densely populated sides of the town, having to either go over Chaconnell Street or come in and go in the Muncharlis Road. Or worse again, that people say, she can't get into Donegal and go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's a problem too. And we have cases of people saying that they would normally come to Donegal and do their business, but now they go elsewhere. And that's, you know, how is that good for business or anything? I don't understand, you know.
So, I don't think the genie now can be put back in the bottle, Pádraig. Is there any working theories amongst yourself or amongst those that you've been communicating with that could be a solution? Because the one-way system now is locked in because the road has been narrowed to the point whereby it can be never made two-way again, as far as I'm aware. I wouldn't like to unravel that mess.
I would say never say never. We have the Tully Air Junction that was never going to be a roundabout,
right,
and
yeah,
it was never going to be this. And you know it because you pass it a couple of times a day. Mm. Now it's a roundabout. So, I mean, look, there's certain aspects of the town and the one-way system do benefit, and the wider footpaths and access for disabled and all that there is a good job. But we're calling for Water Street, New Row, to possibly go back to a two-way system, and to look at short-term parking in around the town area. You know, maybe one-hour parking to allow the movement of traffic and
on the two streets that you mentioned, Porrig, could I can't picture it in my head. Would that require undoing the widening of footpaths, or do they remain wide enough to facilitate two-way traffic?
There would be a certain amount of it would have to be
dug up, effectively
reduced, right. Cut down the footpath. But I mean, you know, look, stranger things have happened. Changes have been made before, and you know, look, this system is a system, and these specifications are implemented to obtain the grant system, and you know, they're kind of a generic to every town in the country. But I think this should be individualised to the towns, and the grant should be specified for that, you know, and that like some systems just don't work in certain towns, and that's just the way it is. I mean, Letterkenny to a certain systems that just don't work.
But the whole movement in Letterkenny, the whole movement is towards actually increasing the flow of traffic and making it easier to go in and shop. What we've seen is a significant investment in Donegal Town that actually has done the opposite. It's restricted the movement of traffic, and it's made it less attractive to go in and shop, because even once you actually finally get into the town, you know, it can be tough to get parking. Forget about on the main street. And the one or two disabled parking spaces are there, which I think is criminal. Even when you go into the main car park, you know, in the back there around about the credit union and what have you, you know, parking spaces are at a premium. It's very, very difficult. And for some, the key's too far away, you know, so it's everything has sort of been designed very sadly, because it's a beautiful, vibrant town, especially as it seems to be getting more tourism footfall now, or, you know, occasional weekend footfall. We should be doing things to improve stuff, not to mention double parking around the Diamond, 5 or 6 buses outside the Abbey Hotel. Not only a bus sitting outside the Abbey Hotel, but sitting outside the Abbey Hotel double parked while the bus space is actually lying there empty, blocked. Crazy stuff, but someone needs to take control of the situation. Is it going to be the council, Porrig?
Well, hopefully. I mean, you know, this is a great opportunity. It's a rare. Well, I've never been at a public meeting at the council office, and all the councillors and council engineers are attending. And it's not a witch hunt. It's people, you know, they can't say, oh, you know, there's nothing we can do. Get out, open your mouth and speak at the meeting and get, you know, and discuss. And if you have ideas about the town and things you would like to see in the town, the councillors are all there. They're available to talk. We have met with the council twice, and you know, as a result of the public meeting back in the start of May or whatever, we said that we'd come back to the people after meeting with the council, and we'd tell them how we were getting on. And this is us, you know, saying doing what we said we would do, and you know, hopefully that we can meet some common ground. And that certain areas of the one-way system can be looked at, you know.
Right, where's the meeting? I get you now, I see from my notes. Right, it's council responding to issues raised at a public meeting that took place in May in the Abbey Hotel. This meeting is on Thursday at 8 p.m. It's at the Council Chamber Public Services Centre in Donegal Town. Local councillors will be in attendance, and you're asked to have your say. It's your town, have your say. The Donegal Town Traffic and Parking Improvements Committee are inviting the public to do so. I'm trying to think of the space in that room. I've been in there for a couple of meetings.
The screen can go back. We've been assured that it can hold up to 100 people.
Okay, brilliant
stuff. So, you know, and hopefully now it will be well attended. People get out and air there. Because, like, last weekend we had the celebrations of the 550. The Diamond looked beautiful. It was a great, you know, a lot of impact with the light parades and all. And it was a great, it is a great town. It's probably one of the jewels in Donegal. It's the gateway. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just want it better. But we're not trying to have, as I say, a witch hunt here. We just want to be right for everyone. And we just feel that certain aspects of this is not right. And hopefully we can come to
it's public money being spent for the public. And Public should have. I know there was a consultation, but anyway. All right, Porrick, thanks for your time. Take care. The Mayor of Donegal Town, Porrick Kenny, that meeting Thursday, 8 p.m. in the council offices there in Donegal Town. Now, Enya Martin joins me on the show now. Hi, Enya.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing all right. What about you?
I'm not too bad. I'm getting ready to go to Galway. I'm over there at the festival now for the next 2 days.
Looking forward to it or dreading it?
Ah, no, I'm looking forward to it. Galway, actually, you know, I have a really bad relationship with Galway because my social media was hacked the last time I was there. My car broke down another time I was there, but I think we're starting to get on now a bit better.
Yeah, all right. Back to mend the bridges. Your latest book, One for the Girlos, is out now. Talk to us about the book.
So the great thing about the book is you actually don't have to read it from start to finish. You could open it on any chapter because it's like a self-help book. Okay. It's a self-help book for you and your friends. So each chapter I focus on a different scenario. So, you know, how to survive the girls' WhatsApp group, how to survive a girl's holiday, how to support your bestie through a breakup. There's nothing in that book I haven't thought of when it comes to female friendships. So obviously I'm a comic, so a lot of it is coming from a funny place, but I can't confirm whether some of the stories aren't based on a true story.
Well, see, that's the problem. If I was one of your mates now, I'm leafing through here and I'm going, what am I, Emma? Am I Emma? I'm not Emma.
Yeah, but you know what? The feedback I've been getting from the book is people are like, that's my friend, or that's me, or, you know, maybe some of my friends are under pseudonames. But the best thing to do, Greg, is not to ask them for permission, because otherwise you won't have any material.
The, you know, if you watch a show like, I think it's Bad Sisters, for an example, a lot of people enjoy that, especially girls with sisters, because they almost say, right, well, that's Karen, that's Mary, and that's Jane, right? They recognise their sisters and that. Is there quite a bit of that in this book, that if you have a group, a friends group, you can almost identify which one is the various characters in your book, and that's where you get the laugh, isn't it?
Yeah, well, a lot of the content I make online, a lot of videos that I started making when I established my page were videos based on groups of women. You know, that friend who's always tight with their money, that friend who, you know, is a A-class waffler. Like,
friend's a bit dipsy. This one's a bit dipsy, wondering what the sixth one is.
Yeah. No, the rich friend growing up, because there's a chapter on how did I end up friends with these people, and they're all the friends that you had to go through to develop your core group. So again, like the compulsive liar, or the friend who was always grounded, or the rich friend. And we all had them. And the thing is, when you're getting comments on your videos online, like, oh, that's my friend, or that's me, you know it's relatable, and you know you're not the only one going through it.
And of course, you've been able to draw on your own experience, but also your sort of your comedic skills as well. Who are you hoping picks up this book? Because, I mean, listen, it's one for the girlos, right? But I can imagine there's lots of fellas who get a bit of crack out of this. But certainly if you're struggling to get something for another half, we are heading towards Christmas here, and you're going, well, what could I get them? They would consider a nice little bit of thought in a book like this, I think.
Oh, it's a proper, like, coffee table book. And again, it's a book you can pick up and you don't have to read from start to finish, you know? But I definitely think it's a good Chris Kindle idea. And there's actually a chapter in that, Surviving the Woke Christmas Party, which are woke friends. So it's an ideal Christmas gift, especially if you're a fella and you're looking for a little stocking filler. Or look, the lads might enjoy reading it too, and they might learn a lot about the female species.
And is there anything useful in here for girls, or is it fun?
Oh, definitely. Well, to be honest, like, you're going to get crack out of it, you know. You're going to giggle at it more so. Like, I think every girl's going to experience every scenario in that book, either past, present, or future. There's nothing in it that they probably haven't been through yet. But I think it's more of, like, from a comedy standpoint, but relatable, you know. It is still a survival guide, and it's to ensure that you're not the only girl going through it.
Yeah, I think, well, my favourite type of comedy is the sort of where you can relate to what the comedian's talking about, or it's observational. Do you know what I mean? And that's kind of your stuff, isn't it? Ask Your Ma is your latest show. I think that's the one you're probably taking to Galway, is it? It's reflecting on your life experiences as well, so it feels real.
Yeah, so the Ask Your Ma one was... the show that I'd done up until last Christmas.
Ah, right, so you've changed. Okay.
Is it just me now? Is the new one? And it's basically touching on, is it just me who goes through these things? And, you know, it's a rhetorical question because it's not just me. And again, like you said, it's relatable comedy. So a lot of the material is relatable, you know, relationships, holidays, friends, the works.
All right, brilliant stuff. The book's out now. It's called One for the Girlos. Enjoy Galway. Hopefully nothing happens. two words, you know, get a service and two-factor login would be my suggestion.
Oh, definitely. Two-factor authentication, yeah.
All right, take care of yourself. Thanks very much. Anya Martin there, who is an influencer, but also is a very well-liked sellout comic there. One for the Girlos. It's a bit of fun, actually. I was flicking through it as I was leading up to that interview, and it's kind of observational and fun, and it uses real language. And I would say, looking through it, you will either pick yourself out in it in certain segments, or you'll definitely see your mates. It's a bit of fun. How did I become friends with these people is one of the questions answered. Supporting your bestie through a breakup. Work friends are in a league of their own. Navigating the female WhatsApp group. I wonder what's the difference between a female WhatsApp group and a male WhatsApp group. When the girls' holiday makes it out of the group chat. I like that one. Navigating the girls' night out. Surviving the hen party. And when your best friend becomes a mother for the first time. So there's comedy in there, but there's an element of sort of, you know, real life experiences and stuff as well. Always a pleasure to chat to Anya.